Why don't you all introduce yourselves and then tell us how Killset got its start.
So I'm Smooka. I'm the singer, screamer, grunter, growler, whatever you need from me.
I'm Dave, the guitar player, backing vocals.
This is Mark. I play bass for Killset. And just basically look, you know, I make the band look better.
He work on our cars. He does the work on our automobile.
Nice. So how did you guys form, man? How long have you guys been around, and how did you form?
We got one more for you.
Oh, okay.
You got to talk, though.
Hello.
Hey.
All right, this is the drummer. That's our drummer.
You got to speak up, bro.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so that was James, our drummer. He's just warming up his voice for the interview.
Okay.
Basically, we got our start, man. We got in contact with each other years before I actually became a part of this, and this is Chris again, the singer. Randomly through, you know, just knowing people and stuff, I got a call some years before from Mark, the bassist, and we had been talking a little bit, but we had both been in other projects, and then fast forward a few years later, and these guys were in a band called A Race Called Man at the time, and they were looking for somebody to come in. So I got the call, and I said, yeah, let's come down, you know, let's see how the vibe is, see how the writing style is. And it went incredibly well, and the rest is kind of history. We started writing. The writing process was really cool because we all come from kind of different, I guess, influences, but we kind of came into it saying there's not any rules in the writing process. Basically, the only rule is if it sounds cool, it's cool, and if it sounds like crap, it's crap. And that's kind of where we took it and created this album, Know Your Killer.
Nice. And I've heard the new singles, My Whole Life and Cold Victim, and I was kind of floored, man. I mean, they both have such a groove to them, and I mean, they don't let up at all, man. So why don't you tell us how the writing process is in finding like killer riffs like that, because I mean, what it reminded me of was it reminded me of the good old days, like with you know, bands like Metallica and Anthrax, where it was just like one like riff hook after the other, just like a brutal assault for 5 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really play a role in the writing of the guitars and stuff. We all kind of give our input, but I mean, Dave and Mark and even James, they can kind of, you know, tell you a little bit more about that.
Well, you know, because you may hear Metallica and someone else hear like Seven Dust. You know, it comes from anywhere else. So if you hear a riff, it sounds sort of like something that came from like one element of the band, but then it'll take a 180 turn into another direction, where, you know, you might get a hip-hop influence or something like that that comes through. So it's all over the place, but I'm glad you like the track.
Thanks. It almost seems like you guys are all about the groove. Like everything, you know, everything has a thumping groove to it, which, you know, is like the surefire way, if you do it right, you know, to get a mass audience.
It's all about the bass.
I don't know if it was our drummer James or someone in the band. I don't know, maybe it was a term already called groove metal. Maybe that's been a term that's been thrown around.
Yeah, well,
I don't want to label it that hard.
It's pretty much, but this is Mark. Basically, you know, like James and I, we've been, I mean, all of us in different bands, like Dave and I will go way back, and we're very used to our styles of playing together. And then after we kind of, you know, when Dave and I toured before, that band split up, and that's when I met James. And James and I go back, I mean, we've been playing since like 2003. And, it's definitely an element we like to add. It's all these bands. It's either like straightforward, hard, fast, you know, which there's nothing wrong with that. Everybody to each their own. We like the aggression. We like all that stuff. But there's one thing main thing that we have in common with, you know, even though we have all different influences, that the no matter how hard it is, it has to have a hook. It has to have some type of, you know, it's one thing. We want riffs that you could, you know, the guys are definitely, you know, bouncing or slamming their heads, right? But we want to make the girls dance. You know, you just want to have that element to it.
Oh yeah, you guys have hooks in the verses, man. I mean, you've got these tracks set.
Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah, but for me, when I'm, you know, writing melodies and things, and everybody influences the melodies in this band, you know, the vocal melodies and stuff. But when I'm writing them, it's incredibly important to, like, have some aggression, but also have something that, if you were to strip it down, take away everything, you could put some of these in, like, more like even like just regular rock or hard rock songs. I want there to be moments of like chaos, and you'll see that in Cold Victim. You've heard it. There's moments of just pure chaos, instrumentally, vocally, but then it's always going to have that hook. It's always going to have something where it can commercially reach a lot of people, and that's very important for us.
Yeah. Cold Victim actually has somewhat of a tension that builds up through the song, too.
Oh, for sure. And what was really cool, I don't know if you noticed it, was, like I said, with the no rules in the writing, we use a lot of, like, hook, like samples and drum loops and stuff. Well, this was one where the concept of the song about not being a victim kind of progressed throughout the writing process, and there was a moment where we were thinking about adding some samples and things where it came up like, why don't we have a woman just screaming in the background to create this tension? And if you listen to the song closely, you'll hear about, you know, around the bridge point, this just guttural scream from a woman as if, you know, something obviously horrible is happening to her. We want to create horrible vision, but at the end it says, you know, I won't live this life of victim. Don't live this life of victim. So even in horrible things happen to you, you can always overcome them.
Now, Luca, you said you didn't really have a process in the music part of the songwriting. Do you come up with lyrics first, or do the guys come to you with some riffs and then you think of what to write about, or like pick a subject and then go from there?
For me, it's incredibly important to have music given to me first, so that I can take what they have created and give it the justice it deserves. Like, they'll give me a riff, or we'll sit in the room, and whatever, I always come up with the melody first. Words can be really easy once you have that melody. And for me, it's all about finding those melodies, because that's what's going to grab people. And then lyrically, I like to take my time on my own, sit down with it, and really delve into that, whether it's my personal experiences. We have a song on the record called A Better Way that I wrote up with about Mark and his father. Basically, I said, you know, tell me a story. And he told me a story, and then I was able to hopefully capture that. So for me, the lyrics are the last thing, honestly. I'll be humming melodies all day long in these songs, and I just need a private moment to kind of sit at home, have the melody figured out, and then really kind of figure out what, you know, what it should be written about.
Now, what was it like going into the studio with Eddie Wall, working on your EP?
It was phenomenal. I've actually known Eddie for about 8 years. He cut my last two records before I was even in Killset. And he was amazing. And I became very good friends with him. And when we decided to cut this record, I mean, he did everything. He did the EP, he did the full length. And when we decided to create and record music, I said, you guys got to meet this dude, and he's going to be the guy for us. And he was, man. He killed it. His brain works in a very amazing way, I think, and that's why I've worked with him for so many years. He's a good friend, and he's a better producer, in my opinion.
Now, what is your live show like as compared to your EP? Because, like, you know, I always think, well, you know, you get one representation of a band on a studio track, and then you go there, and you're going to get a totally different impression of them. So what's Killset like live?
Our ultimate goal, and I would love you or any of your listeners to come see us live, we literally leave nothing left on the stage. I always say, if you're not coming off that stage drenched in sweat, you know, about to pass out and throw up, then you didn't do it right. You didn't give the fans what they deserve. I think if you ask anybody in this area, as far as live show is concerned, We are top of the game out here. We named the band after the idea that we're going to kill the set. It's that simple. We want to kill that set, that 30-minute set we have, that 45-minute set we have, where we aim to destroy it. We aim to kill it.
Another thing is, as great as the record sounds, and we're very proud of it, the songs really come to life when we actually play them on stage. They get embellished on, and the energy is just twice as much. So you have a good live set.
Yeah, what you hear on that CD is what you're going to get live.
And
you're not going to get something that's overproduced and then you come to a show.
And you're disappointed.
Yeah, and you're like, wait a minute, how come I didn't hear any of that stuff on it? It's all live. I mean, what you hear on CD is what you're going to get live.
Oh, okay. So you don't steer too far from the course as far as the art form.
One more time?
So what I said was, so you don't steer too far from the course when it comes to your art form.
Oh, definitely.
No, we don't.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm
agreeing with them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, well, I got to ask also, because I'm a musician myself, and I love the tones that you guys have, from the bass to the drums to the guitars to the vocals. I mean, everything just melts together. So, stereotypical musician question, what gear are you guys using, and how do you have everything set?
Our drummer just got a new drum kit, which is pretty crazy.
Well, it starts with his green shorts. that's everything right there.
James, tell him a little bit about your kit, bro.
I don't know.
The parts are round.
There's some cymbals and some drums and a seat.
Okay, he's getting shot. I'll tell you, the guitar player Dave, I use a Houston Kettner Core Blade, which is just a fierce amplifier. The guitars I use, much to the band's dismay, I like them a lot. They're made by Ovation, and they made an electric guitar series in early to mid 70s. And
no,
I had them all these.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Those are nice.
Yeah, there's two, they're called the Breadwinner, and there's one called the Deacon. They stopped making them. And the original electronics in them are pretty crappy, but you know, I threw some DiMarzios in the back, some super distortion, and they're nice.
They're nice. Never stop, man.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's basically what I use, Mark.
Oh God, you know, mine's top secret. I can't tell you that.
Because he doesn't know. He had somebody who was here for him.
so you got your bass wrapped in like foil, so nobody knows what it is, and.
You'd be surprised. It's like every show I'll get a bass player come up to me and say, you know, it's like, dude, what are you running through? Like, I always get compliments on the tone and everything, but it's something that I experimented with for years and years. And because the top bass players, like, I mean, I combine the tones. If you were to combine the tones of the punch of, like, let's say, I like that King's X Doug Pinnick.
Oh, yes, yes.
Very punchy, distorty, but you know. But then you have some bright attacks of like what Chancellor does from Tool.
Yep. Have you seen Doug's new Tech 21 amp?
I have not.
Hey, Doug.
Did he
Doug Pinnick. I saw it at NAMM this year. He has a brand new signature Tech 21 amp that is exactly as you described. It's two separate channels that you can turn one channel off or leave them both on. One is the low end and one is the distorted high end.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He's, for years, he's always, if you look at his bass, he's always had two jacks going to his bass. And I've tried to emulate that for so long without obviously the two jacks or thing, but when he finally came out with his, I mean, he had different brands, but I was pretty much set up to emulate that tone because, you know, I use a foot, you know, like my foot pedals. I have a preamp, you know, going through my effects loop on my, I run, you know, through an Ampeg SVP Pro 4, and then I have a Sandep rack mount, and then some Boss pedals, and, you know, so just, you know, I mean, you just got to set it up right. And
in a live setting, his bass tone is ridiculous. It is really good. He's got the bottom end. He also can put in some top end fuzz if he needs it for aggressive parts. He doesn't lose. You know, a lot of bass players when they hit on the distortion,
you lose
the bottom end.
It's
incredible. It's good song.
And I got to suggest though, James, in this whole interview, James hasn't said anything. For anybody who's listening to this interview, or if you yourself come out and watch us, it's like everybody puts their eyes on James when he plays. The guy's like a maniac on stage. I don't know why he's being like gunshot.
And I also say, going back, I was going to say when we were talking about Cold Victim is, you know, Chris wrote some great lyrics, and I think the title of the song Cold Victim came from James, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it did. Well, the main riff came from James.
Well, the main quote. Well, actually, I wrote the riff. It's a guitar riff.
Yeah, the song was called Come Get Some.
Yeah, it was called Come Get Some. The original song was called Come Get Some. And then James came in one day, said some, read something on the news about a cool victim. Or like,
this is the Boston.
Oh, the Boston bombing? Was that what it was? Oh, okay. So there you go. We just learned something. You just learned something.
The Boston bombing? Okay, so it started out with the Boston bombing.
And Cole Vick, that you wrote it. Hello, this is James. Off speak now. I just felt that Come Get Some wasn't, I don't know, man. I'm always looking for, like, weird, cool titles of songs, things like that. And I actually was moved by the Boston bombing. I actually was pissed. I actually wanted to drive out there and beat the crap out of that kid and his brother for doing that. And he had no remorse, nothing. I just felt like an incredible victim. And that's just kind of like where Chris created that thing of being a victim of anything in life, no matter what it is. And those, all them people, victims, man.
Yeah.
I was a victim because I had to sit there and watch it on the news, and I felt my heart went out.
I think that's one of those instances where the whole country becomes a victim in a way.
True,
right? And then
it doesn't happen that often, you know. When something big like that happens, that's huge, man.
And what's cool is that, like, with any kind of like major, you know, thing that happens and occurs in this country, we all kind of band together. And we don't allow ourselves to be victimized. We become one. We stand together. And that's kind of what the song's about, too.
It makes us stronger.
Yeah.
So, now, well, let me ask you this, since it's about the Boston bombing. What did you guys think about Rolling Stone putting them on the cover?
Wow.
Remember? Do you guys remember that?
There was a lot of controversy around that.
Rolling Stone magazine put... Well, he put the youngest brother, the one that's in prison now, he put him... It was bullshit. That, you know, David Draymond got a lot of crap for that because he felt, like a lot of artists, putting that kid on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine. And then what happened is, like, all the Twitter, he blew up, like, oh, look at that innocent kid. All the girls were like, how did you put him in prison? That whole thing was, like, a big thing.
Yeah.
He boycotted.
Here's the thing. This is my view on it. Why is anybody shocked that Rolling Stone did that? It's publicity, and it brings the magazine money.
Yeah, because it's controversy.
It didn't bring them money. Okay, they shut it down.
Think about this. World War II, okay? World War II, you got the country. Who built the vehicles for Hitler? Ford. Who held the money? Chase Bank. Texas, you know, supplied them with oil. I mean, you know, all that gold that Chase Bank held, it was from the melted teeth, the eye frames and the rings from the Jews that were getting, you know, exterminated. So, I mean, in this country, it's all about its money. I mean, I don't know why anybody's shocked. I mean,
it sold more magazines because he was on the cover, because everybody wanted to know why. You know, so yeah. they go ahead and buy it. Another example is, and this always actually upsets me, is when people talk about 9/11, they, you know, and they come out with something new or something, or like some special or some article or something, they always show pictures of the jumpers, you know, for pure shock value, which I am not for. I don't think there should be any pictures of people dying online with that.
Yeah,
like in anything, listen, shock value sells, but you can't replace quality, even in music. Listen, you can be shocking, you can be whatever, but eventually, if you put out a quality product, that's what's important.
Yeah, good example for that's 2 Live Crew. I mean, they shocked everybody back in 89, but the album was absolute crap.
Yeah.
You know, I mean...
Yeah, a lot of music.
Yeah, well, I mean, think about it. They could have done what they any you know, foul mouthed little brats with a Casio could have done that album,
right?
You know, so I mean, at least with songs like Cold Victim and stuff, I mean, the hooks bring you in, and then you listen to the vocals, and then you listen to the meaning.
Yeah, it's always important, and I had certain meanings when I write these songs, but I always find it interesting if someone will come to me, and not necessarily on these two specific songs, but you know, on the record. And I actually enjoy it when someone finds a different meaning in my lyrics. and they're able to kind of attach it to their life and their experiences. I always find that really cool.
That is always cool. Well, let me ask you this. I mean, a lot of your music seems like, you know, it has a meaning to it. And at times, like, My Whole Life has kind of a poignant side to it. I mean, even though, you know, I would consider the music hard rock, you know, or hardcore, but the music, you know, the lyrics are kind of poignant. Do you feel like when you guys are live, that people are listening to the lyrics? Do you get feedback on the meanings of the songs?
A couple of times. I mean, it's like I've run into people where lyrics mean everything to them. And just vice versa, where people are just like so into the music and they don't even hear the lyrics. It's, but I think, honestly, if you want to hit, I mean, you've got to tell a good story. I mean, lyrically, I agree that it, you know, I'm, I think that's what all of us are on the same page. Lyrics are extremely important.
And the great thing is, Chill Set has both. Great music, great lyrics. So it can really speak to anybody.
Yeah, a lot of times it's just like, you know, like if I'm writing riffs and I bring them to the band or anything, that's the first thing. It's like, you know, I'll tell Chris, I'm like, hey, this is what I'm feeling when I'm writing this. This is what I, you know what I'm saying, you know. Like you said, it was about, you know, when I wrote a song about my dad and everything, and I was telling him, he's like, well, tell me about it. Because honestly, I'm a horrible lyricist. I can tell you how, as a musician, I write with feeling. If I'm sad, I'll write something sad. If I'm angry, I'll write something aggressive. And, you know, and that's how I express it. But lyrically, I suck. You know, so I'll just,
you know, why would you say that?
That was Mark the bass, because he does suck. This is Luca the singer. I don't suck. No, he was really good at telling me, and again, if you have the full record, you get it at some point. It's a song called A Better Way, and, you know, he definitely just told me a story about, you know, his father and things of that nature. And you just hope that, I've done that a couple of times in past projects where sometimes you don't want to delve into yourself. You know what I mean? You want to tell someone else's story. I really enjoy that. And this one turned out really cool. And another one too, Mark came in with a basic idea. It's a brand new track we haven't recorded called Broken Angel. And that one kind of went pretty well too. He started telling me a story. So as far as lyrics are concerned, I find them to be, you know, incredibly important also. But again, no matter what you write, everyone's going to take their own, they're going to take what they take from it.
And I remember when we're going back to A Better Way, when Chris was writing the lyrics, he was really concerned. He was showing them, I said, it's okay, because it was a sensitive subject, you know, and Chris was really respectful about that and making sure this is what I've written here. You know.
Mm-hmm. I think it was Bono from U2 that once said that when he writes lyrics, he's getting something off his back and hopefully it'll go into someone else's ears. Do you guys agree with that?
That's pretty cool.
We're going to steal that.
yeah, you know what? Restart this interview. That's what I'm
going to
say.
Nice. Nice. Knowing my luck, Bono will hear it and he'll be like, man. So, well, what do you guys think about how things are now in the music industry? And what I mean by that is the indie scene versus the label scene, and using digital media versus just signing to a label and have them take care of your brand. I mean, which way would you guys rather go?
I mean, I would say in general, our goal is support. I don't care who it is, management, agent, PR. You can do a lot on your own right now. Honestly, you can be heard by so many more people than you ever could have back in the day. At the same time, it's just flooded. I mean, online is flooded with music.
Exactly.
Anyone can create anything.
That's an easy question.
It cheapens it, and it also, you know, lessens your value. And
it's hard for bands to survive.
Back in the day with labels, it was way better. It was way better because you would sit there and you'd put out in front of, you know, they would actually give money to the band.
They would promote you.
And they would promote you, you know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah, you would give up a lot of your rights to the album and stuff like that, but at least, you know, publishing was yours, at least merch was yours, you know, and then you sit out there and you go out there, I mean, then they would support you and put you in front of thousands of people. They would pay a headliner to put you on tour, you know, with them.
indie, you're talking about the indie route. Well, that was because it was forced, that route. It wasn't by choice. It was by from all the youth coming in and downloading the free music, shutting the labels out, making them bankrupt. And this is a situation we're forced to deal with, now.
That being said, I would say 90% of the time when we play shows out here, we hook up all of our fans. We get them in for free. We give them, if someone asks for a CD, I don't say, hey, give me $10. I go, here's a CD. Honestly, I want people to hear our stuff. I feel like it's more important that we get people out to our live shows and that they respect us and that they want it. Like, half of them will go, no, I'm giving you money for this. You love what you do. Cool. But I'm not like, dude, I'm not that guy who's like, trying to like get every penny in. I want to create music. I want to be respected. I want to be heard. And, it's tough right now, but, with the industry the way it is. But you can do it, honestly. I mean, we've seen our fan base grow immensely just by showing them love. They show us love, we show them love, and it all works out in the end.
Mm-hmm. You know what else is cool, too, with what you said? I see more and more where, yeah, there's a lot of white noise out there on the indie side of it because of all the consumption, but you brought up a good point, and that is that, it's with it being a lot harder work nowadays, a lot of the people who half-ass it just fall by the wayside.
Oh, for sure, yeah. Unless you approach this in an incredibly professional way, where this is your life, this is your love, and you're not going to take no for an answer, you're going to fail. Or you're just the luckiest person in the world.
Yeah, I would tell anybody, man, it's like if any kid asks, what to expect in this, and like if you want to be a rock star, how they do it. If anything, you do it for the love, because you love this. This is your passion. This is who you are.
I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, if something breaks through, it breaks through. But if you're strictly going to give up your whole entire life to live inside of a van, with a roll of nickels and a bag of Funyuns, thinking you're going to be the next person that's going to be, playing at an arena, man, it's like...
You might not even be able to afford Funyuns.
Exactly.
But I mean, really, we do this because we have to. We want to.
Do it for the love.
We can't not do this. This is all we know.
Yeah.
What we do.
Well, and another thing too, some people have the fire to the point, like being a musician myself, I know what you're talking about, because it's one of those career choices where if you don't make it when you're 40 or 50, you're going to wonder what would have happened if you did.
Yeah, but at least you can come out of it and say you gave it a shot. Like, the worst thing you could ever do is I live in Hollywood, right? I came out from Connecticut, 10 years ago, and regardless, and I've had very good success in music, and I've had bad, times, but regardless, when it's all said and done, I did it, and I it sucks. I would hate to be the person that had this dream and never actually put anything into it.
No one could accuse Luca of not trying hard enough or not doing enough. That's not the case.
Yeah.
All right, sorry, I'll give you a shot.
Nice. Well, let me ask you this then. Having said all that, well, let's say that Capitol or CBS or Warner or Vivendi or Universal came up to you and then offered you the standard first label or first deal contract, would you take?
Okay, well, are you talking about the record industry of 20 years ago or record industry of today?
At 2015, right now.
2015? Most likely not.
This is James Ryan. When you actually get a deal from one of those labels, usually they are pretty good, but they're very far and few. My take on the industry is that, and you've noticed, you said you're a musician. How many bands are crappy? I'm not going to name bands. How many bands are crappy? How many bands in the 80s signed deals, put maybe one or two albums out, and then broke up? And honestly, I blame those bands because I think those bands
kind of screwed up the label industry, because let's say a label signs a big band. Like I said, I'm not going to name names. They sign a big band, and they take the money, and the band breaks up because of egos, because of people like that. I think that also washed down the industry and kind of ruined it, man. And the labels are pretty scared to take a chance and put out those $250,000 deals, man.
Well, nowadays, this Mark, nowadays, you're looking at whether you want 50% of your merch, whether you want, you know, most of your publishing rights, you want all of your albums, you know, like whatever CDs you put out. I mean, it's just, honestly, it's almost the, unless you get a really good deal on how they break it down to you, and if they're going to take 50-50, which a lot of them, because now since everybody does, since all these kids and everything, it's like they're stealing. I mean, they could just basically take all your music for free, right? It's not hard. It takes maybe the few people that buy your CD and they start sharing it all over the place. But the thing is this, the record companies know that they're not going to make the money they used to make off of CDs. So that's why they tap in to your publishing and your merch. And so therefore, if someone's going to do that and you're going to go that route, and this is for us or any other band, you know, you could tell them, you know, just, What you want to do is, okay, if you're gonna take half of our stuff, or even more than that, right? What are you gonna do for us marketing wise? That would be really important to us. Now, if they say we could put you on every shelf in America, we don't give a crap about that. You could put us in all over the record stores or whatever left of that, or internet. But if nobody knows we're there, it's just gonna be sitting there.
Yeah, but
on the shelf. So you want marketing, and then you want them to put you in front of, you know, with bigger bands to use their crowd, their following as well, so you can sell that.
Everything's been scaled down in the 80s or 70s and 80s. That's big budgets for recording, to where it would take thousands and thousands of dollars to put out the product, where now you could do crazy stuff in your house. And the technology has gotten so great that the recording budget is like 5% of what it used to be.
I would say any label that we would be interested on, any deal, the main thing would be, what can they do, like Mark was saying, forget, you know, getting our music, whatever, because we can do that.
Yeah.
It's getting us as a live band in front of people and getting our name out there. Our live show is what we are very proud of, and we feel like you put us in front of people, we'll take it over. We'll take over the rest. You just put us in front of people. So if that's part of the deal, where they're going to get us in front of thousands at the show, and we can basically, then it's on us. Then it's our job to win all those people over.
Not just the people, but getting us on the radio and internet radio like you do.
Yeah. So like marketing.
Regardless of what you do, people have to hear the music too, whether they buy it or not. They at least have to hear it.
Yeah.
Okay, the label can put you in front of opening up for Slipknot. Doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to cheer for you and like you. Just if your music's not on the radio, they're not going to know who you are.
I would say the optimum word is exposure.
Exposure.
Live exposure. Exposure in every aspect. That would be the key.
Then it's on us.
No, I know people at four major labels. I mean, I won't say which ones because I'm pretty tight with them, but they all have the same, what they call an introductory deal that they give to never signed before bands. And what they consider a never signed band is every member in the band has also never been signed to a label with another band or as themselves. So, you know, that it's basically, you know, like what they call greenhorns, you know, like a band that's just fresh out of their hometown. What that is, the standard deal for a band like that is $50,000 advance. You guys pay for the recording and production of the album out of that $50,000. You pay for your food, place to stay, all that stuff out of your $50,000. You give the label the album. They have you guys submit graphics for it If they like it, they use it. If they don't, they change it. They put the album out there as a standard release, which is roughly 50 to 100,000 copies. Digital, you know, like on CD, they put it on iTunes, all that stuff. They put you on their website. The promotion they start out with is they start hooking you up on summer tours. And then in conjunction with that summer tours, like maybe a month, like 30 to 45 days ahead of you hitting that city, they hit up the radio stations in that area. You know, with your singles, and say this band's going to be opening up for so and so, and then if that takes off, then they amp it up and then get you premiere spots on iTunes. They look at using your music in motion picture soundtracks, so on and so forth. But what they do is you don't get a dime after that 50. Sometimes you'll get an extra 25 grand if they have enough faith in you and you're like lagging behind, but you don't get a penny till that money's given back to them with 10 to 25% interest. And then they get a perpetuity percentage of at least 50% on the album sales and the single sales in perpetuity.
Well, I would say that we are always looking for help, but that, I would say 75% of the stuff you said, we've kind of already done on our own.
it's kind of bullshit when it's told to you, isn't it?
Listen, we recorded with a world-renowned producer. We put the record, we got the record done on our own. We've, got it all over. It's basically, I would say, the majority of that stuff we already did. So for us, I don't know. That would seem not right. But the only thing, actually, that you just mentioned, which is something we are working on, is the touring aspect of that. We have a lot of friends in the industry and we're working on, are personally doing that ourselves. That would be the thing that would actually interest me out of everything you just said right there. Everything else, through our friends and our connections, I pretty much think we could do on our own or have.
And think about this. If the four of you guys got $50,000, that's split four ways. That's $12,500. Then you're going to be putting 90% of it back into the project. You're not really making anything.
Financially, that is just, I mean, I wish I had a button where Charles Barkley, when you hear him, he goes, that's terrible.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Well, I mean, think about it. You know what a here's the thing too. Like, you know what a studio costs. Now, imagine if Capitol Records gave you that 50 grand, you're already signed, and they say, because this is one thing they will do. They say, I want you working at this studio with this producer, and that money comes out of that 50 grand.
You already have a kick-ass product. You know, our album sounds amazing. So
Yeah, as far as with Eddie, what he's recorded already, I mean, there's nothing, I mean, you know.
I would say for us, and as far as Killset's concerned, I don't know what you would call us, but we are all kind of, have been around and have been signed and done toured with really big bands. We're kind of like a group of guys that said, I've seen what you've done and I loved it. I think that if we can put this together and create something new and exciting, that will take off. I mean, as far as, like, you know, check marks off on our careers, I think we've all done too much for that type of deal. But at the same time, any help is massively appreciated. So you take each situation differently.
Yeah. Yeah, because nobody sees the tedious, monotonous, time-consuming stuff that bands do behind the scenes. They just see the gigs and they hear the music.
Right.
You know, I mean...
Yeah.
Well, I mean, think about it. I mean, 90% of being in a band is work. It's hard work. If you make that choice where this is my career path, I mean, it's a 24-hour job.
You need to approach it literally like it's your job. And for the most part, in your life, other than family, it should take the number two, I guess, after family. It should take the number two position in your life. That's the only way you're going to succeed. Pretty much forget music and anything in life. Unless you're driven, unless you're willing to put, like, the practice in and the behind the scenes to become prepared at something, whatever it is, you're not going to succeed. Or, again, you might, but you might just also be a very lucky person. You know, you should never fail at something because you didn't work hard enough. That's just a cop-out.
Exactly. Well, I mean, and the hard work shows in what you guys are doing, man. I mean, my hat's off to you.
Well, I appreciate that so, very much.
So now where can we find you guys online? And also, what do you guys have coming up?
So online, we got our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/killsetofficial. That's got all the music, pics, got videos. We got reverbnation.com/killset, same thing. We got a Twitter page. That's twitter.com/_killset_. We got Instagram. We're on all the time. I love Instagram. That one's just instagram.com/killset. We have a YouTube channel. I believe it's youtube.com/killsetofficial. And, we've been playing some shows, a lot of shows. We're on Pandora now. You can check us out on Pandora. We have our own station here. We've played a lot of shows, and actually, we decided to kind of back off for just a little bit. We really want to focus on our marketing, our PR, our, like, getting people to actually hear this product. The big show comes around. We're working on, like, maybe one or two more big shows for the end of the year. Big show comes around, we'll take it, no problem. But we really want to focus on this product. We have a music video coming out. It's the middle of September for Cold Victim, which we're really, really excited about. We just shot another music video. We're the first band, actually, to ever shoot a music video in virtual reality technology. So a buddy that owns a virtual reality company came down, and we shot this thing. We basically put the virtual reality camera in the center, and we've got the band around it, and then people all around us.
Party.
And we created, we threw a party, and we basically take the viewer, and we bring them into the mosh pit, so when someone's watching it, they can put on the helmet and they're transported into the mosh pit. They can look 360 degrees. This company is called VR Live. They're amazing. They also have an app where you can just move your phone around and it changes your view. So it's like you're there. So we've transported the viewer into the mosh pit. So we're really proud of that. That's going to be a couple months out. We're really just focused on product, getting our product heard, honestly, because live shows, we do that. We really do that well, I have to say. And we've been doing this long enough that's something that we work hard at, but it comes second nature. We've worked on the live show. We've worked on the effects. But getting people to hear this product, that's what we're focused on.